ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय I'm reading from Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This is an extract from chapter 35, which is titled, The Gopis' Feelings of Separation. And in this chapter, the gopis of Vrindavan describe succinctly, in brief, various facets of Krishna's pastimes. Pastimes is the word that's well known in Indian languages as Leela. So they're describing Krishna's Nama, Guna, Rupa, and especially Leela. So at the end of this chapter, Srila Prabhupada comments thus, I'm just reading from the end of the chapter. Such descriptions of Krishna's transcendental pastimes and activities were remembered by the gopis during his absence from Vrindavan. That means that Krishna every day would take the cows into the forest, and the gopis would remain in the village of Vrindavan and they would talk about Krishna. So they remembered Krishna during his absence from Vrindavan. They, such descriptions, give us some idea of how attractive Krishna is, not only to human beings, but to all animate and inanimate objects, because Krishna is attractive not only to human beings, but to the, especially to the cows of Vrindavan, and to the birds, and even to the trees, and even to the stones, and the river Yamuna. Krishna is attractive to everyone. In Vrindavan, everyone and everything is attracted to Krishna, including the trees, the plants, the water, and animals like the deer and cows. That is the perfect description of Krishna's all attractiveness. The example of the gopis is very instructive to persons who are trying to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. One can very easily associate with Krishna simply by remembering his transcendental pastimes. Everyone has a tendency to love someone. That Krishna should be the object of love is the central point of Krishna consciousness. By constantly chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and remembering the transcendental pastimes of Krishna, one can be fully in Krishna consciousness and thus make his life sublime and fruitful. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 35th chapter of Krishna, the gopis' feelings of separation. Am I supposed to be speaking in English, by the way? Is that right? Does everyone understand English? Or we need translation, or should I speak in Hindi? We have a lot of non-Hindi speakers here. What was the idea? English. Everyone likes English. Yes. Modern Indians. There was a dispute of whether Hindi or Sanskrit should be the national language, but by default it's become English. All right. Well, there's one great advantage of the English language over even Sanskrit. What is that? Well, you could say people speak it all over the world, not everywhere. The greatest advantage is that Prabhupada wrote his books mostly in English, so we can access Prabhupada's books through English. Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is quite well known, quite famous in India. Who has got Bhagavad Gita as it is by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, in their home? Please raise your hand. Yeah, many of you have. If you don't have, it's about time you did. You can rectify that at the book table. Yeah, it's well known. Recently, or last year, a special edition was made, especially for one of the, I think it was the bigger of the two Ambani brothers. They asked to make a special deluxe edition to distribute to their friends. And when they were asked why this edition in particular, they said, because, well, when you think of Bhagavad Gita, you think of ISKCON's Bhagavad Gita. So that's become very well known. That is Krishna Katha. Bhagavad Gita is Krishna Katha. There are two principal forms of Krishna Katha. There is Krishnasya Katha, that which is spoken by Krishna, of which most famous is Bhagavad Gita. And there's Krishna Vishayak Katha, topics of Krishna, about Krishna. One is by Krishna and another is about Krishna. So the most important of the topics about Krishna is recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam and especially in the 10th canto, Dashama Skanda. This is Srila Prabhupada who composed the Bhagavad Gita as it is. This is Srila Prabhupada's rendition of the Dasham Skanda of Bhagavatam in English. So this book should become as well known as Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna gives the philosophical understanding of why we should always think of Him, why we should take to bhakti, to Krishna, Krishna bhakti. Krishna gives His most important instruction in Bhagavad Gita at the end of Bhagavad Gita. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru mame vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyosi me. Lord Krishna tells Arjuna, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, bow down to me. In this way you will surely come to me. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. So the first thing is to think of Krishna. If we're going to be devotees of Krishna, we have to think of Krishna. So we can think of Krishna in various ways. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna described in response to Krishna, to Arjuna's question, how should we think of you? Krishna gives descriptions of His various vibhutis. That's in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, known as the Vibhuti Yoga chapter, in which Lord Krishna describes how He can be perceived through anything wonderful in this world. Aksharanam akaro smi, beginning from the everything in this world is describable. So description is done by letters, and letters begins with A. And the letters are called Akshara. Aksha means from A to Ksha. Everything within existence is describable by the letters from A to Ksha. So that's another meaning of Akshara. So among all the letters, Krishna is the first. Prahladas chasmi daityanam. Krishna gives so many examples. Among the descendants of Diti, he is Prahlad. So many examples he gives. These are ways by seeing wonderful things in this world, or the prominent things in this world, we can begin to perceive Krishna. What is described here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially in this Dasham Skanda, and especially in relation to the gopis, who are the topmost devotees of Krishna, is how to remember Krishna directly by remembering his transcendental pastimes. Now, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, this ISKCON, International Society for Krishna Consciousness, has gained some prominence in India, at least among Hindus in general, or more educated Hindus. Everyone has heard of ISKCON. And some people even know that ISKCON means International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This Krishna Consciousness term is taken from a shloka by Srila Rupa Goswami, who is the principal follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavanamati Kriyatam Yadi Katopi Labhyate Tatra Lolyam Apimulyam Ekalam Janma Koti Sukritayar Nalabhyate. In this verse, Rupa Goswami says that Krishna Bhakti Ras Bhavana. It's very difficult to translate in English, but I think you can all understand what that means. At least to some extent we can understand what it means. At least we can understand what the words mean to some extent. So this Krishna Bhavana, so this verse says that if one's consciousness is absorbed in the rasa of Krishna Bhakti, feelings for Krishna, if it is possible to attain this, one should by all means attain it. If it is available anywhere, one should purchase this. So how can we purchase Krishna consciousness? What is the price? So the price, Rupa Goswami says, is greed, or very strong desire to attain it. And even ordinary pious activities in many millions of lives do not qualify us to understand Krishna. So what is the purpose of ISKCON? What do you think? Building temples. That's one thing that ISKCON does. Distributing food to school children. That's something else. Collecting lots of money, that's something else ISKCON does. That's also true. Singing and dancing, these are things that... Actually, this is what ISKCON is most famous for in the Western countries. For the singing the holy names of Krishna. Well, what's it all meant for? Why did Srila Prabhupada start this ISKCON movement all over the world? What is the actual purpose? So, here, Srila Prabhupada gives the answer. That Krishna should be the object of love is the central point of Krishna consciousness. This society, big society all over the world with many temples and many activities, the central point is of this movement is that Krishna should be the object of love. And Srila Prabhupada notes here that everyone has a tendency to love someone. Everyone here has loved ones, isn't it? You all have people you love Is it? That's good. It's good that you love someone, because in some places in the world, they've completely banished from human society the tendency to love anyone. In some places, they don't love anyone. It's not encouraged in human society. You can't imagine. I was staying in Finland. Helsinki is the capital, and it's hell and it's sinking. So it's hell and it's getting worse all the time. There's actually a place in Norway where the town is called Hell. It's up in the Arctic Circle. So anyway, I was staying in an apartment there, which is close to our ISKCON center. And that apartment is kept for sannyasis. And so it's a very small apartment, one-room apartment, and there's a... One room means a lot smaller than this room, just room to stretch up, stretch down, and lie down. And there was a tiny little bathroom with a washing machine. And on the other side, there was a tiny little, not really a kitchen, what they call a kitchenette. It's not really for cooking anything, but just for making coffee or something like that. Of course, we don't make coffee, but that's what it was designed for. So there was a whole big building full of these tiny little apartments. So I said to the Tamil president, well, it's a bit small, isn't it? I mean, it's okay for me, but how do people live in them? He said, well, it's all for one, people living alone. He said, so many people? Yeah, he said, everyone in the whole city lives like that. Doesn't anyone ever get married? He said, not much, they just live alone all their life, that's all. They go to work, they come back to their apartment, they go out, they eat something at a cafe outside, so they don't need to cook anything. Then they go out to some bar or something, or watch TV in their little apartment, and they spend their whole life like that. They don't have anyone that they love. The suicide rate is very high. Because people don't have anyone to live for except themselves. Selfishness means living for myself. Love means to live for others. That I don't do everything just for myself, but there are other persons I want to please. Srila Prabhupada noted when he went to the Western countries that people, they like to keep pets. Dogs, cats, these are very popular in the Western world, and of course in Bangalore, because Bangalore's imitating everything Western. Of course, no one in Bangalore ever knows, they never learn how to control a dog, so you see people with a dog on the lead and the dog's dragging them all over the place. You're supposed to train the dog so that you tell the dog what to do, but the dog drags the people all around, and that's morning exercise. It's supposed to be exercise for the dog, but it's more like exercise for the people, because they get pulled here and there. Anyway, many people in the West, they don't have real friends, or they don't have a family, but they have a dog, or dogs, and they love their dogs. Dogs are better than humans. They don't argue with you. They're happy to see you. Better to have a dog. That's what people think. Better have a dog than... They don't sue you either. If you marry someone in the West and then they get a divorce, they take all your money away from you. So dogs are better. That's what people think. Many people. So Srila Prabhupada noted the tendency is to... The tendency to love, if you give up on the hope of loving any human being, then people, they love dogs or cats or some other such pet. The tendency to love is natural for everyone. So it's better to love than not love, isn't it? It's better to love people than hate people. That's true. However, in material existence, love means hate. If there is love, there is hate. This material world is the world of duality. So, just like there is hot, there is cold. There is happiness, there is distress. There is love, there is hate. Just like you love your family members, and that is extended to other people who are similar to your family. Just like Kannadigas, they don't like Tamils because of the Kaveri water dispute. I mean, they may have some, when they meet them, they may say, hello, how are you? But when it comes to talking about Kaveri water, then they don't like them at all. Because we don't have enough water here. And why you, around the other way, Tamils want to keep it. So the Tamils don't like, and there's, basically when there's a cricket match between India and Pakistan, then they're all together. But when they're talking about Kaveri water, then they don't like each other. So like that. We're all Indians, but there are divisions also. And it's quite possible, due to the nature of this material world, that people who are living peacefully together they can suddenly become enemies. Just like at the time of India's so-called independence, Muslims and Hindus who had been living together for many years in the same village, they decided they should start killing each other. They never had any idea to kill each other or have any enmity. They used to join in each other's festivals, and then due to some political agitation, they started to, they actually killed each other. There's a typical story from that period that one Hindu in Lahore, he used to go to work. On his way to work every day, he would stop at a Muslim tea store and take his chai from Muslim tea store means it was a tea stall owned by a Muslim. It wasn't a Muslim tea stall. But it was. And so one day he was coming up, and this agitation had begun, Muslim, Hindu, and he'd been coming for like 20, 30 years every morning. And every morning when this man would come for his chai, the shopkeeper saw him coming and he'd pour out his chai and give it to him. So one morning, when the Hindu customer came, instead of pulling out the chai and giving it to him, he pulled out a gun and gave him a bullet in the head. Does it make any sense? No. But this is just an example. I'm not on the Hindu-Muslim stomp here. I'm just giving it as an example. That our affection, that can, that affection to one person or one family or one community, because the nature of this material world is such that there is always rivalry and competition. So that basic live and let live spirit among human beings can at any time be compromised. And we've seen that. in recent history. I was just talking about India and Pakistan. In Germany during the Nazi period, many people, ordinary people who were doctors and all kinds of people, doctors and lawyers and village officials, and they became part of the oppression of Jews and others, and they would organize and take part in the what later became known as the Holocaust. There was a massive genocide of Jews under, and it was, who was doing that? It was ordinary people who were just like ordinary decent people, you might say, like we think ourselves to be. That was recently experienced, more recently in the former Yugoslavia. There are several devotees here from the former Yugoslavia, which is now divided as Serbia, Croatia, Bosnia, Montenegro, and Slovenia.
Macedonia.
Did I say that? And something else, and probably tomorrow something else too. And even not everyone will accept that, because the Serbs won't accept that Macedonia, and the Greeks won't accept it, and you know, it's, they were all together. And there were many Croatians married to Serbs, but when this agitation came up, the same man who loved his wife and had children by his wife, there are many cases that he's killing their wife because she's from the other community. The same woman he loved, overnight, due to propaganda, he hated her to the extent that he killed her. Now, this is not just one, but many cases. Did it actually happen? Oh, yes, it certainly did. I'm not just... not. There were horrible stories. Very... oh no, there are many, 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 many horrible stories. Many horrible stories. Which was unimaginable, that people were living together and in the same village for years together, and then just due to some propaganda, they started hating each other. Now there's an example of how love, it's expected that you love your wife, and although there are many jokes to the contrary, but basically it is expected that people love their wives. And I mean, that's the normal situation in human society. In the modern age, it's something abnormal. But that love can very quickly turn to hate, either of the object of love, or because you love one person or one group, then you hate others. So in this material world, there, where there is love, that will be followed by hate. Where there is peace, that will be followed by war. Where there is war, that will be followed by peace. Where there is prosperity, that will be followed by poverty. That is the nature of this material world. So this Krishna consciousness movement, the main point of all the activities that we are doing, our aim and object is not in and of itself building temples or collecting money or even distributing Bhagavad Gita. Even that is the means to the end of everyone coming to understand that the central, or the object of love for everyone is Krishna. Therefore we build temples. Why do we build temples? So that people will come and be in a Krishna conscious atmosphere, and that atmosphere of remembering Krishna is reproduced. It's there. So the residents of the temple and the persons who regular, the visitors to the temple, will experience an atmosphere of Krishna consciousness, which means remembering Krishna, with love. so that people will be inspired and nourished in their love for Krishna. And we distribute Bhagavad Gita as it is. We don't distribute Dr. Radha Krishna's Bhagavad Gita, or Tilak's, or Gandhi's Bhagavad Gita, or any, there are so many editions of Bhagavad Gita. But we distribute Srila Prabhupada's edition of Bhagavad Gita, because Srila Prabhupada gave the actual message of Bhagavad Gita, which is that everyone is meant for loving Krishna. And other commentators on Bhagavad Gita, no doubt they may be very scholarly and insightful in various ways, but basically they have missed the point that Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mang namaskaru mame vaishasi satyang te pratijane priyosi me. All descriptions of karma, jnana and yoga in Bhagavad Gita are meant to lead to this point, that of always thinking of Krishna, always remembering Krishna, becoming Krishna's devotee, worshipping Krishna, bowing down to Krishna, and going to Krishna in the spiritual world. We do not belong in this material world, which is certified by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita as Dukhalayama Shashvatam. This is a place of misery, and everything here is temporary. Our tendency is to love. Therefore, better class of people, they try to love others. And others, there are some people, they cultivate hatred of others. There are some people who do that. But the tendency is to love. Even Hitler, who's in the Western world up to the present day, if you say the name Hitler, still people spit, or they feel very bad about that. But even he had his girlfriend, someone he loved. Yeah, Eva Braun. She loved him so much, she died with him, so we're told. They never found the bodies. He might be alive somewhere, you never know. So, even he had a tendency to love someone. And his whole endeavor, Hitler's endeavor, was to promote the German people. We love the Germans, and therefore we hate the Jews, the Poles, the Ukrainians, the Russians, the Serbs, the Croats, the French, and you know, everyone else, pretty much. We love the Germans. So that tendency to love in this material world, that although we think that this, I will love someone, and they will love me, and we shall live happily ever after. You're all modern Indians, so you've all read to your children Western fairy stories, in which the ending is just like Cinderella or Goldilocks. This is the nonsense that Indian children are growing up with these days, instead of Ram Leela and Krishna Leela. So the end of the story is, and they lived happily ever after. This is called a fairy story, because no one in the material world lives forever anyway, and definitely not happily. We see people get married and they're smiling in the photo, but they have just signed a contract for sharing their misery, sharing their struggle and suffering. This is what marriage is. Love in the material world is we share our suffering. That's all. It's a struggle. Life's a big struggle. And if there's someone to struggle along with, we love them. And but however much we love them, we have to be separated from them. If not by divorce, by time. Therefore, love in this material world always ends in misery, always ends in distress. But We are not against love. We are not saying don't love. There are some spiritualists who recommend having no attachment to anything. They have rightly analyzed that attachment is the cause of bondage in this material world. Therefore, we should not be attached to anyone or anything. We should be completely detached from everything. Sripad Shankaracharya, he was preaching, and if anyone accepted his philosophy, they would have to take sannyas, that's all. That's the logical conclusion of his philosophy. So if anyone in the modern age says that they're a follower of Shankaracharya, then we have to see if they're going to take sannyas. And they wouldn't even be allowed to in the Shankara Sampradaya unless they're born in a Brahmin family. So it's pretty difficult to get liberated. First of all, you have to get born in a Brahmin family. Then you have to take sannyas. Then you can get liberated according to that system. However, this detachment from everything is not the message of this Krishna consciousness movement. We recommend being attached to Krishna. We recommend, because that is the recommendation of Krishna himself, and that is the recommendation of all persons, including ultimately Sripad Shankaracharya, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Muramate, Samprapte Sanihite Kale Nahi Nahi Rakshati Dukrin Karane. His ultimate instruction was, you fools, you're simply lost in the world of Sanskrit grammar, but at the time of death, that won't protect you. You have to worship Govinda. So, if our attachment is directed to Krishna, we will never be disappointed. That is Krishna is the actual object of love. Krishna is the actual object of love by which we will remain fully satisfied eternally. We all have an eternal relationship with Krishna, but forgetting our eternal relationship with Krishna, we establish relationships within this material world which are reflections or shadows of our real eternal relationship with Krishna. What we call love in this material world is just a tiny expression of the pure transcendental emotion of the devotees, of whom, among whom the gopis are being described here. The pure devotees of Krishna, their love for Krishna is unbroken, completely pure. Now, in this material world, love is considered something very pure, isn't it? But love in this material world, what is the purity of that? 24 carats? They say love that is expressed by diamonds. If it's not expressed by diamonds, you won't have anyone to love. So that just goes to show, what do you love? Now, why is it that men tend to love beautiful young women and not ugly old women? Why is that? They're attracted to the body. not the person? Why is it that women tend to love men who are capable of giving them 24 carat diamonds and not to men who are pulling their teller? Of course, they don't have that in Bangalore. That's out of date. But still in some city. I don't think they have in Bangalore anymore, do they? It doesn't matter. In Ahmedabad, you still have camel carts in the street. On the, you know, they have like the super highway and there's camels. Camel carts still on them. So why is it that women tend to be attracted, or women want to marry a man who is very rich and not a man who is a camel cart driver? Why is that? It means that the love is, it has some motive also. What do I get? What's in it for me? But love of Krishna is unmotivated, and the topmost love is that of the residents of Vrindavan who are not attracted to Krishna because of his wealth and his opulence, which he undoubtedly possesses, but just because they love Krishna because of his wonderful personality, the wonderful exchanges he has with them. In this love, there is no exploitation. Krishna owns everything. He has nothing to gain from anyone. Krishna is the supreme controller, but he doesn't exploit anyone. He is fully self-satisfied. Krishna has nothing to get from anyone. So Krishna, in his exchange with others, is simply giving his love to others. That is love which we can reciprocate purely. And Krishna is unlimited. That's why Krishna can reciprocate with every single person fully. It's just like if a man has, Krishna's an example. Krishna has 16,108 wives. Now, if anyone in this world has 16,108 wives, then probably at least 16,100 will be lamenting most of the time, because eight is, I mean, that's quite a lot of wives to keep satisfied and to have a relation, you know, to see them regularly. And you can't eat 16,000 breakfasts. But Krishna can. That's the difference between Krishna and everyone else. That Krishna has 16,108 wives, and Krishna expands himself into 16,108 forms and takes breakfast in 16,108 palaces, and each of the wives is fully satisfied that my husband is with me all the time. Krishna can do that. No one else can do that. Sometimes people, they criticize, why has he got so many wives? Srila Prabhupada's reply was, why so few? He's the Supreme Lord. He can have 16 billion trillion wives. There's no limit to Krishna, what he can do. Krishna fully reciprocates with everyone. In Vrindavan, even the grass, even the flecks of dust on the ground, they're all great rishis who have taken that position. They've deliberately taken birth in Vrindavan as a blade of grass, so that at some point Krishna and his devotees will place their lotus feet upon that piece of grass. And that rishi, who after many lifetimes of meditation has achieved perfection, they are intelligent enough to understand that the ultimate perfection is to have the feet of Krishna on my head. So let me become a piece of grass in Vrindavan. And they're fully satisfied. Every living being and everything in Vrindavan is conscious. Like, just like that. The water, the trees, the ground, everything is fully conscious. And every person, which means every animate and inanimate object, is fully surcharged with love for Krishna, and Krishna personally reciprocates with all the gopis, with all his gopas, the cowherd boyfriends. Krishna has unlimited cows and calves, and he knows them all by name, and he has a personal relationship with every one of them. This is possible for Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and what is the most important thing about Krishna? That he's the Supreme Lord, he's the Supreme Controller. If you don't do what he says, you'll get punished by the laws of karma. This is not the most important thing. This is what we have to hear about in this material world. If we don't follow dharma, we shall be punished. If we eat meat, drink wine, smoking and liquor strictly prohibited, if we don't follow, there's the sign, if we don't follow that, then we get a severe punishment by the laws of karma. So we may be afraid, oh, I shouldn't do that. The laws of karma means the laws set up ultimately by the Supreme Lord Krishna. Those laws are to warn us not to perform activities which will diminish or cover our spiritual consciousness. Because human life is meant for God realization, and activities like illicit sex, gambling, meat eating and intoxication and all these kind of activities that modern Bangalore is dedicated to, these are activities which cover our spiritual consciousness. And therefore, they are forbidden for civilized people. On the pain of punishment, we hear from scripture that people who engage in these activities, they have to suffer. So, these laws are upheld by the Supreme Controller, who is Krishna. So in the beginning stages, we may have faith in God or believe in God out of fear that if we don't follow his directions, if we perform sinful activities, that we have to suffer. And the other side of it, we may have faith in God that if I go to the temple and pray to God, he will help me. That's why even today, so many people go to, especially to Tirupati, isn't it? Because people have faith. And I guess it works, otherwise people wouldn't keep on going. That it's a good deal. If you put in 1,000 rupees, you get 10,000 back. People have faith. In Chennai, there's a famous temple, Visa Ganesh. You go and pray to this Ganesh, you get your visa for America, or wherever, or wherever you want to go. Temple's called Visa Ganesh. I guess it's becoming less popular nowadays with it, so many people coming back from America. But for a time, at least it was good. So, that's two good reasons to believe in God. If you don't, you have to suffer. And if you do, you can enjoy the material world better by his blessings. However, even if we enjoy the material world better by his blessings, it's only a better way to suffer janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha, birth, death, old age and disease, because that is the nature of this material world. And as those who have been to America, got their visa for America, can attest, there is at least as much birth, death, old age and disease in America as in India. and the number or the percentage of Americans who suffer from this is the same as the percentage of Indians, which is 100%. So there's no way to avoid it. And even if you go to the Swarga Loka, where you can join Indra in dancing with the Apsaras, but even there is fear and rivalry and envy. There is corporate politics, office politics, even in Swarga Loka. And when you've had good time dancing with the Apsaras, the party's over. Tetam Bhuktva Swarga Lokam Vishalam Kshine Punye Marta Lokam Vishanti. After having enjoyed with the Apsaras, you have to come back and get a job with HP or something, and then go to Tirupati and ask Balaji, can you send me back to heaven? It was better out there. So, of course, we get a job with HP nowadays, you think you're so fortunate because, they're throwing people out left, right, and center. I guess they know, all the other companies. So, love of Krishna is on a platform above what can I get from God? Or I should be a good, because otherwise God will punish me, and if I'm good, He'll reward me by, at least I can hold on to my job. It's the best you can hope for nowadays. But love of Krishna is far beyond this platform. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught, Nadhanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, Kavitam Va Jagadisha Kamaye, Mama Janmani Janmani Shvare Bhavatad Bhaktir Ahaituki Twaye. Everyone goes to God, whether they call Him Jehovah or God or Ishvara, Allah, Tera, Naam, whatever they call Him, everyone goes to Him and asks Him, may I be popular, may I be wealthy, may I have a beautiful wife, may I enjoy this material world. Some people who are more intelligent, they pray for moksha. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I don't pray for popularity. I don't pray for wealth. I don't pray for beautiful women. I don't pray for any material facility. I don't even pray for moksha. I simply pray that I may serve you without any personal desire. You may think, well, what's the point? What are you going to serve? What are you going to serve God for if you don't get anything from it? I mean, you should get something. Everything we do in this world, we expect to get something. We marry someone, we expect there shall be some exchange. There shall be some love. We shall enjoy loving them. So we expect, everything that we do, we expect to get something back. So if we love Krishna, what will we get back? Yeah, we will get. What will we get? Well, if we don't ask Krishna for anything material, and if we don't ask Krishna for anything moksha, then what do we get? We get Krishna. Because Krishna gives Himself to His devotees. And Krishna is supremely lovable. Krishna means all attractive. That is the very meaning of His name. Krishna reciprocates with everyone in such a way that they are fully satisfied. What is the nature of the satisfaction that Krishna gives? It's not the satisfaction of the senses. It's not the satisfaction of coming into an air-conditioned apartment on a hot summer's day. Or it's not the satisfaction of drinking a hot cup of coffee on a cold winter's morning. The satisfaction of loving Krishna or the satisfaction that Krishna gives is experienced by the pure devotees of Krishna, whose heart is simply overwhelmed with pure love for Krishna, and Krishna reciprocates with them in various ways, just like he reciprocates with the gopis by joking with them, showing himself to them, kissing them. Now we may think, well, kissing, that sounds mundane, but Krishna's kissing the gopis is not the that between boyfriend and girlfriend of this mundane world, or that between husband and wife in this material world, but that is a completely pure and spiritual exchange of love, and therefore that love of Krishna with the gopis is worshipped even by great sannyasis like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Shankaracharya, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, great sannyasis who themselves are completely detached from mundane sex or mundane sex attraction. They worship Krishna as Gopinath, the Lord of the Gopis, because they understand that this exchange of love between Krishna and his devotees, that is on a completely different platform from this perverted and contaminated love of this material world. Because Krishna and his devotees, their reciprocation is completely selfless. The devotees, they only desire to please Krishna, and Krishna only desires to please his devotees. And this relationship, because Krishna is unlimited, that is, there is unlimited love, unlimited bliss, which goes on eternally. It's not limited by time, and it simply increases at every moment. And that is the central point of this Krishna consciousness movement, is simply to remind everyone of the most important thing, which we've all forgotten. We've forgotten it for millions and millions of lifetimes, that we are all part and parcel of Krishna. We are all his servants, and we can never be happy in any situation in this material world. Even if we become Indra, even if we become Brahma, even if we become liberated from this material world, without our relationship with Krishna, we will always be dissatisfied, because our natural position, our constitutional position, is that we are part and parcel of Krishna. We are eternal servants of Krishna. Without remembering that, then without everything we do, all our endeavors, they will all simply result in misery. Parabhavastavat abhuda jata yavanni jigyasata atmatattvam. As long as we do not inquire into the nature of reality, then all our endeavors, they are simply end in defeat. Nate vidu swarthakatim hi vishnum durashaya ye bahirata maninas. This is described by Prahlad Maharaj, because we do not understand that the goal of all our endeavors should be Vishnu. Therefore, we live on the platform of hope. We're always hoping. I will be happy. I will get money. I will be happy. I will maintain my family. I will be happy. But that hope is always shattered. Ultimately, by circumstances or by time that separates, death separates us from our loved ones, and we become disappointed. And then again we get born, and again we hope I'll be very happy, and again we are disillusioned and we have to suffer. But if we direct our loving propensity toward Krishna, then in this life we will be fully satisfied, and that love for Krishna will carry us to Krishna, and we will live with Krishna eternally in a relationship of love. So love for that Krishna should be the object of love is the central point of Krishna consciousness. This one simple thing we have to understand, that we are meant to love Krishna. But it's very difficult for us to understand, because by the power of Maya, we are very much convinced that my love should be directed to other objects. But if we can just understand this simple point, that I am meant for loving Krishna, then our life becomes successful in all respects. Now, does that mean that we have to stop loving our mothers and fathers and friends and children? No, it doesn't mean that at all. It means that if we renovate or re-establish our loving relationship with Krishna, then actually we can love everyone else in a much better way. It's not that we stop loving our loved ones, but we actually start loving them, because as long as we are trying to love on the material platform, there is no real love. Real love means love with Krishna at the center. We can actually love our family members if we direct them to love Krishna, and together we love Krishna. Every parent, because they love their children, they make arrangements for food, clothing, shelter, education, all these things. But the most important thing that we have to give our children is the ultimate purpose of life, to give them Krishna. And if we don't do that, if we don't give them Krishna, or knowledge of Krishna, love of Krishna, then despite all our endeavors to act for their benefit, we don't actually benefit them at all, because they're born and they die again without knowing Krishna. Their human form of life, which is meant for re-establishing our love for Krishna, is wasted. And we live in illusion, they live in illusion, and our family life is like that of the animals, who also have families, and the parents also look after their children. But they have no higher realization. They have no understanding that there is a higher purpose of life than simply eating, sleeping, having children, and fighting with others. Ahara nidra bhaya maitun. They have no understanding of this. So our real love for our family members will begin when we ourselves come to the platform of real love, which is centered on Krishna. And it's not that, well, I have to love my family members less because I have to give my love to Krishna. Because love of Krishna is all expansive. If we love Krishna, because Krishna is the root of all living beings, and Krishna loves all living beings. So if we love Krishna, then our love will expand to all living beings. And this is the actual meaning of Vasundhaiva Kutumbakam. We cannot love everyone unless we know the formula for doing so. What is the center of love? That is Krishna. So this is the object of this Krishna consciousness movement. It is not just another Hindu sect, or something to do if you can't get a job. Young men, if they can't get a job, they can join this movement. It's meant for giving the highest knowledge, which is that knowledge in Bhagavad Gita. And not only giving it, but showing people how to practically live in this world, as Arjuna did, as the gopis did. Live in this world, living their lives in many ways apparently like ordinary people, but being extraordinary people because their loving propensity was centered on Krishna. And therefore, they showed us the way to achieve the topmost perfection of life. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this, please? If anyone has any question, you could kindly stand up and say it, or if you like, you could come up to the front and speak in the mic. Or if you feel shy, as people often do, you could also write it on a piece of paper and pass it up. Any questions or comments or protests? You might not have agreed with everything I said. You might have thought I'm calling you like an animal, for instance. So, if anyone has anything they would like to say to further this discussion, then please say it. No, no one has anything to say. Yes, you'd like to say something. There are different castes like Muslims. Yeah, usually it's not called a caste, but anyway, you get the point. There are castes like Muslims. Yeah.
The question is that everyone avoided that their caste to make them more dear to God.
Everyone says that our path will make us more dear to God. Yeah.
So how does one come to know which exactly is the right?
How does one come to know what is actually the right path? That's a very good question. Thank you very much. That was exactly my question in my youth. I used to go to different people and say, look, everyone says that they've got it. Everyone says that their path is the best. Why should I believe you? If you can convince me, I'll take it. I ended up here. Actually, anyway, that's another thing. This Krishna book was the first book of Srila Prabhupada's I read, volume 2. But I became convinced when I met the devotees of Krishna. I'd already done some pre-philosophizing. It's not super philosophy, but I accepted that there must be God. That even though the church, which in the Western world, which was where I was born this time around, is doing a pretty bad job of advertising God, still, despite the church, there should be God. There must be God. But they didn't understand, so it's not a very good place to go to understand God. Actually, by the as a result of my Christian upbringing, around the age of 11 or so, I became an atheist. Because I thought, well, God, this guy, you know, if you don't believe in him, he throws you into hell forever, and with no chance of coming, you know, that's it. Finished. You have to burn in hell forever. So I thought, well, even if there is a God, I don't want to have anything to do. I'd rather go to hell. You know, what kind of a person is that? So, you know, all right, I'll go to hell. I'll be an atheist. So then as a little bit older, I thought, wait a minute, that's not, you know, there must be a God, and he must be good, but they got their story wrong. He doesn't throw you into hell forever. There must be reincarnation, because it means he gives you more and more chances, right? It's not that if you get it wrong. I mean, I thought even my own father, they talk about God the Father, even my own father, if I do something wrong, he punishes me. And then we go on with life and, you know, he gives me another chance. So if the Supreme Father, if he's not even as merciful as my own father, who's, you know, he's a nice guy, but he's not God. So, you know, what kind of a God is that? So I understood that, well, God must give you another chance, and that's reincarnation. So, and I was already vegetarian. So, I got some things worked out. But then I realized that, you know, there's God's there, but I'm never going to find him by myself. So, I need some help. So when I came to the Krishna temple, I asked the same question. But actually, I was even before talking to the devotees, just by seeing them, I was already very impressed that here are people in the winter in England, which is much colder than the winter in Bangalore. And at that time, our movement didn't have a lot of money, so there was no heating in the building, and it was very cold. So they were obviously living a very austere life. I didn't know how austere until I stayed overnight and they threw me in a shower, cold shower, at 4 o'clock the next morning. But they're obviously leading a very austere life. But they were so happy. They were so blissful. And I hadn't seen anyone happy like that before, because all the happy people I saw, they were advertisement happy. That means in the advertisements they smile. They have a big smile. But if you look in their eyes, the eyes are not smiling. It's a plastic smile. It's the first time in my life I ever saw people smiling, not just with the face, but it was coming from here. So there was an aura of happiness. And then the next morning when I hardly got to sleep because I was used to going to bed around that time. And then they got me up at 4 o'clock and then in a cold shower, which I never even heard of such things existed. And cold means really cold. I mean, you can't imagine how cold. And I thought, well, whatever it is these people are doing, they're really serious about it. And then at 4:30 in the morning, they're up and dancing in the freezing cold, dancing for love of God. I thought, these people, they've got something here. I mean, otherwise, why would you do that? Either you're completely crazy, or they've got something which inspires them to do that. So when I spoke with them, I understood what that thing was. I said to them, well, so many people are saying so many things. And what they said was another thing I'd worked out, is that you just can't, you see, so many people say so many things, they just talk this and that, and just like in India now, there's so many bogus incarnations of God. I mean, it's just like a rash or something. There's so many. I mean, in Bangalore, there used to be just one bogus incarnation of God, but, you know, just outside. No, he's almost dead now, and there's a whole bunch of new ones. And people are so stupid that they believe that. And just how people, you know, there are people who are like computer engineers, and they're materially intelligent but spiritually absolutely dull-headed. Anyway, another thing I'd understood is that, you know, so many people are saying so many things, but you can't just make something up. There should be some ancient tradition. It should come from scripture. Scripture means, okay, there's God. So how does God communicate with us? That's through scripture. And scripture is not something that anyone can make up. So when I was told that we have to accept scripture, I was immediately ready for that. Okay, that's good. I'm with you there. But then, there are different scriptures, and different scriptures, they apparently say different things. So then the description that the devotees gave me, that there are many scriptures that talk of God as being supreme, but they give very little information of who He is. And even though they say to love God, they don't give any information about the nature of that love. How can you love someone you don't know? Just like you've all heard of, what was his name? Barry Golding, right? Barry Golding, you've all heard of him. Never heard of him? Never heard of him. No, all right. Well, if I tell you, you should love Barry Golding. How could you love him? If you tell him you don't love Barry Golding, he'll come and hit you on the head with a hammer. Say, oh, okay, all right. So you say, love God. Why? Well, if you don't, he'll throw you in hell forever. Okay. I love you. I really love you. Don't throw me in hell. I love you. But you can't really love them unless you know who they are, what they do. So the Vedic scriptures give us knowledge of who he is and also a process by which we can love him. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhaktyu paharitam ashnami prayatatmanaha. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that if we offer Krishna a leaf, flower, fruit or water, he will accept it. So that means, what are we doing? We're offering something to him with love. He doesn't need anything from us, but we can offer it to him and a relationship is established. Love means a relationship, right? So relationship means with a person. Who is that person? How does he relate with us? How can we relate with him? We can offer him food. We can chant his names. We can see his beautiful form in the temple. So there is knowledge of God, and there's it's not, and also not just knowledge of not God, but there's a philosophy, philosophical understanding given in scripture which appeals to intelligent people. That, for instance, this point of reincarnation, if you blow it in this life, you'll get another chance. You're not doomed forever. This appeals to intelligent people. What is the cause of our suffering in the material world? According to what I was taught, someone a long time ago called Adam ate an apple. And as a result, everyone has to suffer in this world. It doesn't make any sense. It's not even childish. Even a child can understand this doesn't make any sense. But in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna tells us that Purusha Sukha Dukhanam Bhuktritve Hita Ruchite. Every person is the cause of our own suffering and distress in this world. We are the cause of our present situation. So it's philosophically cogent and it offers us knowledge of God. What does he look like? What does he do? What's he doing? Is he just sitting on a cloud throwing people into hell? That's all he's got to do? So this is, why should we accept Krishna consciousness? Well, if we're actually seeking the ultimate goal of life, we can understand that the ultimate goal of life is not anything of this world, because this world is a world of misery. And we are all seeking happiness. But there is no ultimate happiness in this material world. The happiness of this material world is petty. Especially in the modern age, what is being advertised as happiness? Go to McDonald's. Chew a hamburger. That's happiness. Go to a bar. Work like an ass. And get some money and then spend it like an ass. Drink. And then you start talking like an ass. Start talking ass philosophy due to being drunk. Just like an ass thinks that I'm speaking very high philosophy, a drunken person thinks, no, now I'm talking very, very high topics. He's just drunk, that's all. So this is life in Bangalore today. Be a sophisticated ass. But any intelligent person, and there are not many in Bangalore actually, I mean superficially they are intelligent by becoming chartered accountants and computer engineers, but in terms of actual human intelligence, how many members of ISKCON are there? I mean even a lot of them are misdirected also. So There's not much real intelligence. Real intelligence begins with a philosophical inquiry into the nature of life, such as the question you have put. To answer it fully, you have to read all of Srila Prabhupada's books. I've given a succinct answer. If you want to know, I'm not just going to tell you, you should believe this. Why? Because you should. But what if I don't? Then you go to hell forever. That's what I thought, you know. That's what the Christians say, that's what the Muslims say. Among the Christians, the Protestants say, or the Catholics say, if you don't believe in the Virgin Mary, then you go to hell. And the Protestants say, if you do believe in the Virgin Mary, you go to hell. The Catholics say you have to believe in the Pope. And the Protestants say you definitely don't believe in the Pope. And there's no intelligent way for me to understand which is right. So it's just like, you know, flipping a coin and hope you get it right, you know. If you get it wrong, you're finished forever. Either all the Protestants are going to heaven and the Catholics are going to hell. This is what my religious upbringing was, Irish Catholic, you know, a bunch of fanatics. Or all the Catholics are going to heaven and all the Protestants are going to hell. And there's no, you know, I'm born in a Catholic family and I just hope that it's right. You know, it's really, it's, you know, nerve-wracking. And then you got to die and, you know, now then you find out at the time of death, either God's welcoming me or he's throwing me into hell forever. Depending on whether I believed in the Pope or not. So, it doesn't appeal to any intelligent person. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. He appealed to Arjuna's intelligence. Bhakti is not a matter of non-intelligence. It's not simply sentiment. Bhakti means love for Krishna, as I just discussed. But that love is based, at least from our platform, based on an intelligent understanding of where to place our love. If we love a dog, we become a dog. If we love a mundane woman, we become, in our next life, a woman. Whatever we love, that determines our next life. If we love Krishna, we don't become Krishna. But we go to Krishna to continue our love for Krishna forever. So, as I was saying, Bhagavad Gita as it is well known. And now this Krishna book should be distributed very widely. So that the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita to become Krishna's devotee. Who is that Krishna? We can understand from this book. And actually, the full answer to your question, you can get by reading all of Srila Prabhupada's books. Do you have all of Srila Prabhupada's books? You have a few. You should get them all. It's a very good question, and you'll get the very good answer by taking all of Srila Prabhupada's books. And Narayan Pandit, can you see him afterwards? He can arrange for you to get a full set of Prabhupada's books. And how to remember Krishna always and never forget Krishna. This is also an excellent question. When we've asked every other question and we've got the right answers, then we'll ask this question. When we've asked every other question, the ultimate answer to all questions is always to remember Krishna and never to forget Krishna. So, alright, well, how do I do that? Okay, we'd like to give a practical demonstration.